Welcome to the MS Dev Show, episode number 123. This week, we talk with David Katui about the UWP Community Toolkit, Linux on an 8-bit computer emulating 32 bits, TypeScript 2.0, and this show is late because Jason was riding his boosted board.
This episode of the MS Dev Show is brought to you by Infragistics, providing tools and solutions to accelerate design, development, insights, and collaboration for any organization.
This week we have David Katui, Principal Program Manager at Microsoft, creator of the podcasting app called Cast, creator of Babylon.js, and he's a huge fan of Magic the Gathering. How's it going, David?
I'm doing perfectly well. Hi, guys.
your resume here is extremely impressive. I mean,
thanks.
It only took me a few seconds to say, but I mean, these are like major accomplishments, shipping some fairly big products. So really cool stuff. I think we'll end up having you back to talk about some of these products.
Sure.
It's really cool stuff.
I will be honored.
Yeah. Carl, I don't even know what these notes mean. Video killed the radio star.
Yeah. So, you know, for a long time, you know, I think it's been 2 years now that we redesigned our website and we kind of put some emphasis on getting the audio up there. And in the meantime, we've done video and we've heard a lot of people saying, you know, it's hard to get to the video.
Yes.
So we've made that a whole lot easier. When we have the video released, it takes a little bit longer than the audio to get that all set up. But once we have that, we'll actually switch over from showing you the audio player to now having the video player in. We've done a little bit of work on the site just to make that look a little bit better as well. Mm-hmm. So if you are interested in the video, you can come check it out directly at the site without having to go to Channel 9 or YouTube.
Yeah, it only took like 4 comments before we realized, you know what? People don't know how to get to our video unless they're subscribing at all those different places. So, so it's getting better.
Yeah, and earlier this morning, also, we had a discussion between me and you. Mm-hmm. We're not really huge on Facebook, and me and Jason, personally, mm-hmm. that is. And we have the Facebook page, and we're wondering, do you as users really find our Facebook page useful? Do you want us to do more there? We're not just going to kill it if people find it useful, but if it's not useful to people, we don't really want to keep doing it.
Yep. We're hoping and the answer is no.
Or, you know, it really is useful to you and yep. you have ways to help make us make it better. So mm-hmm. if you like Facebook and want us to do more with it, let us know as well.
Okay, that sounds
great. All right, this week's Infragistics Ultimate Winner of the Week came from a feedback item on the last episode about refactoring with Katrina Owen. It was off of our website. Jared Gray wrote to us saying, "I love listening to your podcast. It's always full of quality content. All jazzed up to go to refactor some code now. I began formatting expressions as Yoda conditions, which I never knew it had a name until now, after the first build I broke from a failing unit test at one of my early jobs because of a missing equal sign. It was mortifying. The next day, one of his coworkers sat him down and explained him how to get around this by doing those Yoda conditions. And now he does that, and the compiler lets you know if you've made a mistake, although he doesn't think he's missed an operator since anyways. And thanks for all your hard work." Well, thank you, Jared, and for this awesome piece of feedback, mm-hmm. you win the Infragistics Ultimate license this week. And if you would like to get mentioned on the show like Jared and potentially win this license, send us an email to feedback@msdevshow.com, comment on Facebook, YouTube, or Stitcher. We really like those 5-star iTunes reviews.
Perfect. Yeah, that was great feedback because, yeah, I mean, I just didn't realize there was like a whole group of developers out there doing that. And they actually had a really good reason for doing it. So, you know, if people didn't listen to the last episode, I guess go do that. But, you know, if anybody's wondering what we're referring to there, it's whenever you say like if false equals, which looks really, really, really strange if you haven't seen it before. But it helps guard against missing an equal sign. So anyway, let's jump into the news. So we only have a couple short items here. So the first one, Linux on an 8-bit microcontroller.
I love these little hardware projects mm-hmm. that people do. And what this is somebody took this micro ARM controller. I mean, it's really small 8-bit microcontroller. really meant for just directly coding what you need. And he modified both it and Linux to be able to run on it.
That's crazy.
And so, to get an idea of really like how fast this thing is, he says just to boot up to a bash prompt takes about 2 hours. And then
useful.
So 4 more hours will boot into Ubuntu.
So this is about the same speed, just to give an idea of scale. It's about the same speed as a Mac Mini without an SSD.
And then he says starting X, which is the windowing environment, takes a lot longer yet.
Yeah.
He says it has an affected emulated CPU speed at about 6.5 kilohertz.
Yeah. So he's using an 8-bit processor to emulate a 32-bit CPU and MMU. That is just crazy.
Yeah, so this is kind of a crazy project, but I just always go nuts over stuff like this. They're really cool to see where some people's passion leads them.
Yeah, you have to be really smart to do this, because if you make a mistake, I mean, waiting 4 hours to know that you made a mistake is pretty terrible. Change your code, wait 4 hours. So I commend him for sticking with it. The secret lab where Nike invented the power lacing shoe of our dreams. Have you ordered yours, Carl?
No. And so people who wonder what we're talking about on Back to the Future 2, one of the things they had like a lot of visual gags on there, mm-hmm. but one of them was like he put on the shoes and they just like tied themselves. Well, Nike apparently has been working for quite a long time to actually make this. And not only that, but it will be available this holiday season to buy. I didn't see anywhere on here how much it costs,
yeah.
but they do have quite a few videos showing them in action and how they work. I even find it cool that they use inductive charging.
Oh, that's cool. Well, so, yeah, because you'd hate to have a USB port.
Yeah, so when you charge these, they'll last for about 2 weeks. They'll tie your shoes for about 2 weeks. And I just think this is really cool.
So, and to be clear, like, it's not actually tying your shoe. Like, there's laces on there, and it kind of, like, sucks them in, right? I mean, just like it did in Back to the Future. Yeah,
there's kind of, like, fly wires.
Yeah.
So it's just cinching the, you know, the laces tight with these wires.
Yeah. I mean, what could go wrong?
assuming they don't have enough power to, like, slice through your foot, so.
Oh, these have to cost a fortune, man. Man, the last gimmick I bought from Nike was the pumps. And, what was that?
Those were Reebok, the Reebok pump.
Oh, really? No. You're right. And then it was like Adidas like ripped it off and had a different name. You're right. But those were like over $100 in like $1990, which is like thousands now, probably. I don't know. Not good at math. The MIT license line by line, 171 words every programmer should understand. Really?
Yeah. So, well, I think this is super important because this is a license that a lot of us use. I know me and you, we've released code under this license before. And sometimes we don't always understand exactly what every little piece is.
Right.
And this isn't a very long license, this blog post kind of goes into not only what does each little section mean, but kind of the history and why it's important that it means what it means.
Yeah, that's more useful than anything, like the actual examples, like here's what happened and here's why this got added. Very cool. Okay, so I should read this then, is what you're saying.
Yes, you should.
So are we going to have a corresponding one for like Apache 2 and some of the other licenses? That'd be pretty handy.
Well, I don't know, but this is out there. And what I didn't realize is how old this license was. It went back to the early 70s.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I didn't realize that either. Okay, TypeScript 2.0. So this just happened yesterday, actually. So this is very cool because I didn't, I sort of lost track. Like, I've been using TypeScript, but, I haven't been too concerned with versions as of late. So what's new is really the big thing here. So one, it's funny. I was just talking to somebody yesterday. We were using TypeScript, and he's like, oh, this is kind of a hassle. Like, I have these extra things that I have to worry about, because JavaScript just lets you do whatever you want, and you can, basically everything turns into a runtime issue, whereas TypeScript tries to make it static. So you essentially at compile time or generate time is whenever it catches the issues. And one of the things that he was really complaining about was how you reference external libraries. So you bring in something. We were bringing in Restify, which I hadn't used before, but it's very cool. So you bring in Restify, and it complains because it says, hey, I don't know. You need type definitions. I need to know how to talk to this thing. And you can safely ignore it, and you get zero IntelliSense. But ideally, you want to bring those types in. And he was complaining about how complex it was. So what they did was they actually made it so you can do npm install dash s @types/ and then the name of the package you're bringing in. You kind of have to look at it. So, you know, obviously we'll have a link to this in the show notes. But that's pretty significant. It makes it really easy to bring in those external types. So whenever you're using one of those external libraries, you can bring that in and you'll get full IntelliSense with those libraries. So that one's pretty exciting. The next one is really interesting, which is non-nullable types. So I think we've talked about this before. You know, null is like the biggest cause of exceptions on the planet, right? You get, you know, null or, you know, you just null exceptions are in general just cause, like, they're pretty much the root of all evil. Let's just kind of leave it at that. So in TypeScript 2.0, they actually have some strict null checking. So if you want to sort of eliminate nulls and deal with them, or only allow them on a case-by-case basis, you can do that. So that's pretty exciting. So I recommend taking a look at that. I'm not sure what that full impact is going to be yet, you know, if I can sort of retrofit a project or if it's really for new stuff. Let's see here. There's a read-only modifier, which is handy. I always use that one in C#, to keep me from changing a value outside of the constructor. Yeah, so those are some of the big things, but I'll, you know, we'll have a link to the blog post. There's lots of really cool stuff in there. TypeScript has really taken on a life of its own. They have some numbers in here. Let's see here. 2,000 plus people commenting on issues, 1,500 plus people logging issues, over 150 people contributing code, and then over 200 million. It's funny, it says greater than 2 million plus. So I think that's redundant, but NPM downloads per month. So it's a big deal. And even, you know, non-Microsoft, you know, people that traditionally like wouldn't use any Microsoft products are using this because it's super useful for layering a type system into JavaScript. And actually, David, you do a lot of JavaScript, right?
Actually, I'm doing now a lot of TypeScript.
Okay. Oh, so you've converted over.
Yes.
Yeah, I did the same.
The version of Babylon.js was completely developed with JavaScript.
Okay.
And we moved to TypeScript then.
Oh, okay, awesome. It's so good, isn't it?
Yeah, agree.
It's just wonderful.
This tool saved me so much time.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, what did you add in here, Carl?
I snuck something in there that I forgot to put in there. So talked about the MIT license.
Yep.
And actually, the other thing that's related to licensing this week was GitHub is now displaying, if you have a license file, it's detecting that and putting it prominently on your repository. So when you first go and look at the overview, you can see, oh, this is MIT or Apache or whatever the license that you chose. So I think that's really important because some of the licenses do come with a little bit of baggage attached compared to others and might influence your decision to use them or not.
Mm-hmm. So I've inserted another story in here because I think this will interest our audience, even though it's not directly a developer thing. So I'll just talk about it for like a minute or two here. So I got a something known as a boosted board. It's a motorized longboard. So I got it about 2 days ago. These things, they had a V1, which I think was on Kickstarter. And then in May, they started taking pre-orders for these things. And this thing is so, so awesome. And it's useful if you have to just go a couple miles. This is a really interesting vehicle because it's a longboard. And I haven't really ridden a skateboard or a longboard before, but this thing is pretty much the most fun technology gadget that I've ever had. This thing is just an absolute blast. And whenever you come out in November, Carl,
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, you'll have to try this thing out. Goes 22 miles an hour. The battery that came with it goes 6 miles. The battery that they're going to ship starting next year it goes like 12 to 14 miles. And whenever you brake on this thing, it will actually recharge the battery as well. So we'll include a link to the show notes so you can go check this out. But if you order one now, like you can't, I don't even think you'd get it this year. You wouldn't get it till next year. I just happened to pre-order on the first day But holy cow, this thing is a lot of fun. So we'll have to do like a MS Dev Show special feature on the
you'll have to record a video with your GoPro and just put it out there.
Yeah. I'm not that stable on this thing yet, especially at low speeds. It's kind of funny because it goes 22 miles an hour. I'm like, that's insane. But actually, when you're going 22 miles an hour, for the most part, you know, as long as you're on something smooth and it's not a sidewalk with cracks or anything, it's actually really stable, or at least around that speed. I wouldn't want to fall at that speed, but it's very stable. It's whenever you're going really slow and you're trying to turn or something like that, that's when I have to look just terrible. So once I get a little more stable on it, then I can record a video and show everybody. But man, for like the Microsoft campus, you know, you park your car and get anywhere on campus in just a few minutes on this thing. I just had to mention it just cause I've been having so much fun. Okay. So that's it for the news, Carl.
Yep.
Okay. So let's talk about the good stuff. The reason why we're here. So David, what the heck is this UWP community toolkit that everybody's so excited about?
Oh, so the UWP community toolkit, it's a name I struggle to pronounce. It'll be too long for a French guy. Yeah. So this toolkit was started. We started working on it 5 months ago.
Okay.
And basically, the idea was we need two things actually. We need first to reconnect with the community. I'm working in the Windows WDG, so Windows and Devices group, mm-hmm. and clearly the idea was to connect with the UWP developer, so the guys that develop for Windows 10 on every devices, from IoT to Xbox, or mobile or desktop, or HoloLens, mm-hmm. Or even Surface Hub. So any kind of developer that wants to develop on these devices. And the idea was to connect with them and clearly to build a project with them from the very beginning. I'm coming from a JavaScript world where mm-hmm. open source is really the boss. Mm-hmm. If you want to do a project, most of the time it's going to be in a way open sourced. So when I joined Windows, I tried to convince management and people that it should be a good idea to work with the community, because at the very end of the day, they are the guys who are connected with the end user. They are the guys who develop the real product using our technologies. So they know what they need.
Yeah.
So that's the reason why we started the toolkit. Working with the community on helpers, on services, on things that can ease, that can simplify how you can create a UWP application. Mm-hmm. That's the UWP community toolkit.
Okay. And who's helped out with that so far?
So at the beginning, we connected with our very own MVPs. So I can give you some names like Morten Nielsen, Scott Lovegrove. They are mostly pretty well-known developers on the community. We also work with Rudy Yoon, with Laurent Bunyan, to try to, and they're French, so that's easier for me. Or they speak French, at least for Laurent.
Yeah.
The idea was, okay, guys, we need to capture what is missing today, or what can we do for developer to help them create great application faster than before. So they helped us. Today we have, and I can give you the really last numbers, we have 41 contributors on the project. So the project is on GitHub. We are under MIT license.
Okay. Which I now understand.
That's what it means, yeah. And so we have 41 contributors. But I have to be honest here. Since the V1, I am humbled by the feedback we get. The toolkit was shipped 1 month ago. Mm-hmm. It was mid-August. And since then, we already have almost 1,000 commits.
Wow.
It's incredible. I spend all my time validating and discussing issues. It's like, oh, man, it was not expected. There is a fun meme on the internet that escalated quickly. Mm-hmm. So 41 contributors. Among these contributors, we have six Microsofties. Anyone else is from the community.
Okay, wow, that's great.
The very first version of Toolkit was like 80% done by Microsoft, 20% by the community. The new V1.1 that we will ship in October, begin early October, is something like 40% Microsoft, 60% community. So it's a tremendous feedback. I'm really humbled about that. That's over what I was dreaming.
Okay, that's very cool.
Yep.
So in a previous episode of the MS Dev Show, we had the authors of the notification toolkit on, and
Andrew.
Yeah,
Andrew Barris and
Andrew Barris.
I was gonna say, and
Heidinger.
Yeah, Matt, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a while ago. It was
about a year ago.
Yeah, that was about a year ago. That's like ancient history now. So it looks like this covers notification stuff too. So what's the deal with that? Is that overlap? Is that replacement?
It's the same.
It's the same.
We convinced them that as a company, we should provide for UWP at least a single place and stop proliferation of various GitHub repos. We should provide, if it's about helping developer to create a UWP application, which is what we want for the toolkit, then it should be in the toolkit.
Okay.
And Andrew was really responsive about this. He told us, yeah, definitely yes. Because when you ship a product as Microsoft, you have to follow a certain amount of rules regarding quality, accessibility, and security. Mm-hmm. And if we have only one repo, we go through this process only once.
Yep.
If you have multiple repos, so as a developer in Microsoft, that's a better idea for us to just merge our effort. And this is what we did with Andrew and the notification team. So what you found before in the notification extension will be now in the notification section of the toolkit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then there's also notification libraries in there for .NET Standard, Portable, WinRT.
I know it could be weird, but actually it's UWP toolkit, and this toolkit is to allow developers.
Oh, we lost you, David. I'll see if he comes back. Well, here, I'll cut this part out. That way I can see it in the video. Either that or I'll forget, and then it'll just look really stupid.
Is it redialing him?
It looks like it is. Yeah. Yeah, so he's recording his own track, but we're not going to use it anyway, so.
Hey,
there you go.
I'm so sorry. My connection just dropped off, and it's not the Wi-Fi. I don't know what happened.
Yeah, the network there gets congested during the day. Can you start your video again?
Yes. Do you want me to
answer?
Yeah,
over
we
again.
Lost you at it's a little weird. So,
so where I was, sorry, a little weird.
So I was talking. We .NET Standard, Portable, RT, and UWP. Yeah.
So, clap. So it's a little bit weird. I agree. So everything in UWP, the idea is if you want to use a UWP feature, you have to be inside a UWP application, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For notification, it's a little bit different. Because notification, you can ask to trigger a notification from ASP.NET, from WinForms. There is no limitation about this. That's why, for the specific case of the notification, we provided a way to trigger UWP notification, but from various sources.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, I have a lot of questions about this specific one. Why? Because UWP. It is.
Because you can.
Because you can, yeah. So why just preventing people to use notification if they don't want to, if they are in Windows Forms?
Yep, makes sense.
So, like, the next area that I saw when I was looking over this toolkit that I thought was really useful was animations, because animations is one of those things that once you get into your app, just a right animation in the right spot can really make it seem professional. So how can I use animations with this toolkit?
I can't agree more. I'm a application developer, and I'm not designer. So most of the time, my application looks really like shit, to be honest. And then you start adding
there goes our clean rating.
Yeah, and you start adding animation and magic happens. And I completely agree with you. That's why we really wanted to help developers add animation without the burden of thinking about all the code that you may need for animations. So right now we have a fluid API for the animation, and that's one of my favorite part of the toolkit. So let's take an example here. I have a button, and when I click on this button, I want to, for instance, move a panel from the left to the right while changing the opacity. So, you know, like you click on the button and the message appears. To do that, you have actually two ways to do that. The first one is you want to use storyboard and animating an XAML, and you create double animation. That's a little bit, that works, no problem. But it could be hard to write and to read. You can also use composition. Composition is extremely powerful, but it requires more code. That's what I want to say here. With the toolkit, what you want to write is panel.offset and the value of the offset that you want, .fade, dot start async.
Ah, this reminds me of like jQuery animations.
Actually, yes. It's what I'm calling a fluid API. You can merge animation by just calling .. that this way, and you have start async at the end, so you can await for it or not, depending on what you want. You can get an event, but it's like one line of code to move, translate, rotate, scale, apply blur. We provide everything in just one line of code. I love that.
That's the way it should be, man.
I agree. Everything should be just one line of code.
Yeah, a couple episodes ago, we were talking about that. We had some examples of animation in different languages, and some of them were just... It's just ridiculous. Like I don't want to write animations that way. Like you should expose, you know, at some level, you can still do this, is kind of get in there and like you said, use composition or the double animations. But that fluent interface, like that's how everybody wants to start for the most part.
Trying it is buying it. Once you try it, you want to use it everywhere.
Yep, absolutely.
Infragistics, Ultimate UX and UI Tools, and Enterprise Mobility Solutions, SharePlus and ReportPlus enable high-performance apps on any device, faster data insights, simplified collaboration, and market-leading security, all backed by comprehensive support. With Infragistics' Ultimate UX and UI Development Toolkit, you can ensure mission-critical applications delivering a superior user experience on the desktop, web, and native device environments for iOS and Android. With the latest BI tools, wow your users with dashboards providing the data insights that they need when and where they need it, all at a low total cost of ownership. Try it today. Download a free trial at infragistics.com and follow them for the latest updates in UX and UI development, reporting, and collaboration at Infragistics on Twitter. And remember, each week, if we pick your comment on the show, you will get a free copy of Infragistics Ultimate UX and UI Toolset.
The underpinnings of these animations, are they using composition APIs by any chance?
They are using both. If composition is not available, we just fall back to storyboard. Mm-hmm. If composition is available, we are using composition. There is just one exception for this stuff. It's the blur. The blur is only available on anniversary update. So if you call blur, it will do nothing if you are using something before anniversary update. There is no crash or whatever, just no effect. And if you are using, if your application is running on a anniversary update machine, then it's going to work. We also provide, obviously, a Boolean to check if blur is supported or not. So as a developer, I check. I don't want to call blur if it's not supported. You can still call it, but it will do nothing.
Just a no op, yeah.
So the other thing that I was wondering if you could explain a little bit too is, you know, I mentioned composition APIs, but can you define what they are and explain why they're important in animation?
Yep. So in animation, the first way of thinking about it in XAML is clearly a storyboard, which is there since the very first WPF. The problem with storyboard animation is that if you want to animate a lot of stuff, it could quickly become slow. Okay? A composition is a way to directly communicate with the composition layer, which is inside XAML. So you have XAML on top, then you have the composition layer responsible for building the visual tree and dispatching everything to DirectX. The composition API is a new way for you to talk not to the XAML layer, but to the composition layer. So obviously, it's a little bit harder because you are talking to a lower level API, but it's obviously really faster. You can easily sustain 60 frames per second and animating 10,000 things on the screen if you are talking to the composition API.
Cool.
The trade-off is more code. And with the toolkit, we remove this trade-off.
Okay.
Isn't that fun? Wonderful?
Yeah, I love getting my cake and being able to eat it.
Absolutely. Like and not paying it. Absolutely.
I like it when my cake blurs as well. So if there's an effect that is not already in there, how is it a good example of how I actually do that?
Sure.
Okay.
So we ship the first version of the toolkit with offset, scale, rotation, and blur.
Okay.
And someone recently added drop shadows.
Okay. So that makes sense. So if I do that, I should just issue a pull request.
Absolutely correct. Do a pull request.
Short version.
And because it's open source, actually, if you are a developer and you know what composition means and you want to provide something in this space, it's extremely easy to just copy paste what we did, for instance, for blur and provide the same for drop shadows. We think about an effect for highs and glass and things like that. You just use composition, you provide the code required, and that's it.
Okay. And then in the animation project, there's something called behaviors. What are behaviors?
Yeah. So I'm not the guy who wrote the composition part. It was done mostly by Nikola Metuyev in my team and Shen Shouan. And there are Blend users. So I am a Visual Studio user only, and I'm not a designer. So I create my XAML just by typing XAML. If you are a designer or if you are a developer who has some skills with design, you may want to use Blend instead of Visual Studio. And in Blend, they have this concept of behavior. A behavior is clearly a behavior that you apply on a XAML object. For instance, a behavior could be on this specific XAML object, let's say a button, I apply a behavior which could be when my mouse enters the control, I want to change a cursor. That's a behavior. Okay. Mm-hmm. There is something to do when a condition is applied. And we provided the same thing for our animation. So instead of typing my control.blur or .rotate or whatever, you can then use purely XAML code. So inside Blend or even inside Visual Studio, you can select your object and say, I want to apply a blur or a rotate or a scale behavior on this specific object.
Okay.
So blur, to me, behavior is clearly no C-sharp code, purely XAML. And that's why we provide both. Depending on how you like it, you can have both.
Okay, very cool.
So another piece of the toolkit that's actually pretty extensive is the control section.
Yep.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so by default, the SDK, Windows 10 SDK, provide a lot of controls, but some of them were missing. So we tried to capture what the community wanted specifically in this area. We ended up with, I guess, 9 controls. V1.1 will have, I guess, 12 controls. Okay. So one of the most used is clearly the hamburger menu. If you know how to create XAML UWP application, you know that there is a split view control in the basic SDK. But for most of the developers, they don't want to hijack this one and add the button and the behavior they want. They just want to drag and drop a hamburger control. So this is what we provided. We built on top of stock controls, and we provided hamburger menu, we provided tiles, we provided, I would say, a range selector, we provided a gauge. This kind of control, which are missing today, that you may want to use in your application.
Okay.
Okay, so normally, like you mentioned before, when Microsoft creates a control, they do a lot of different things like around security, accessibility, making sure left to right and right to left languages all work. Can we expect that same level of support out of these controls?
I want to be honest with you, no. And mostly because we want to ship at a fast pace. Mm-hmm. So let's think about V1.0. We didn't ship any control with accessibility support. We know, and we knew at that time, that it's a mandatory feature. But because we are shipping it fast, we decided that, okay, first version, we ship the control. V1.1, we add accessibility. V1.2, we can check if right to left works.
Yeah. So it's either, like, don't ship it, ship it without that and add it later is kind of the decision you made. Yes. Okay.
The decision we want to go, we are going through a complete testing process regarding the feature itself. So it should work in a general way. But then for additional feature work like accessibility and right to left, I have these two in mind actually. We know we are what we need it, so we ship it in a following version. And I don't want to block contributors, external contributors, to ship something because I know that it could be a little bit tough to add accessibility or localization or this kind of stuff. So we flag controls. We know that they are not complete yet, and then we add what is required. And if you look, for instance, at the pull request we did like last week, it's all about adding accessibility to controls.
Okay, cool. And then you had mentioned the hamburger menu, but are there any other, what are the other like useful controls in there that you like?
Okay, let me open my list. So I am talking about 1.1. So I give you all the control that we will be available early October. Okay. So we have the adaptive grid view. This one is really useful and I use it on all my application. It's a grid view, but with all the burden of thinking about responsive removed for you. So you put your adaptive grid view and you just define, okay, I want this width and this is, sorry, I want this 8 for my items and the width should be this one. But based on the size available, the control can decide to reduce the width so you don't have to do anything about it. And it works then well on your Surface Hub and on your mobile. We have a blade control. This one is really interesting. You perhaps you know the new portal for Azure. They have a blade. You know, you click on a button and a new blade, a new panel open on the right, and etc. We have the same here available for you in your UWP application. We also provide a really highly demanded control, which is the grid splitter. You can have a grid, and now you can put the grid splitter to manually change the size of every of your cells. We have the hamburger menu. We have a image extended control that support caching and offline and placeholder. We also have the pull to refresh list view. You know, on your mobile, when you pull to refresh a list, that's something that we provide for you. We have a radial gauge. We have a range selector. This one is funny. In the SDK, you can specify a value using a slider, but you cannot specify a range with two sliders. So we provide it for you.
Okay.
We have tile, and we have the number one in the earth of the users, which is the slidable list item. If you look at Outlook on your mobile, you can slide on the left to do something, slide on the right to do something else.
Yep.
And that's something now you can just add in your own application. It's basically here.
Perfect.
That's all the control we will provide for one.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, there's another section that you have, the helper section. And I will say that there's some stuff in there that I've written dozens of times, like the color helper. I know I've written that at least 5 or 6 times.
Sure.
So I can see where these are going to be really useful. But one of them that I've noticed, not really familiar with this concept. I was wondering if you could explain what a weak event listener is.
Sure. So regarding the helpers, at the very beginning, I was like you, and I wanted to call them not helpers, but the things I code dozen times. But it's too long, so we call it just helpers. So in the helpers, we have helper for string manipulation, for stream manipulation, etc. We have the color helper, as you mentioned, and we have this weak listener event. The weak listener is probably here to help you fixing one of the more important memory leaks you can find in your application. If you are just using regular event, so let's say you have a page in XAML, you navigate to this page and you add a on-click event on a button, okay? And then you leave this page. The event is still here because the garbage collector cannot collect it because the code inside your event could be tied to something outside the page.
Yeah.
Like you have a view model somewhere and this view model reference a model and this model is still alive and you connected your event to the click button to this event, to this model. So the garbage collector cannot collect it because there is a link. Okay? And that's because of the event. The event keeps everyone alive. The weak listener event is an event which is weak, meaning that the garbage collector can collect it even if it's here. Okay. So you leave your page, boom, garbage collectors know that it can collect everything. And this will save you a lot of memory leaks.
Okay.
It's also one of those subtle things that you might not realize that that there's that reference hanging along, and that's why.
Yeah, like new developers have no idea that that's happening.
Actually, even developer, I did that for my Magic the Gathering application. I'm displaying, I think it's 20,000 image, and all of them has a click. So just by leaving the page twice, you have no more memory.
That's pretty funny. So there's also a services class in there that has, like, you know, there's like Facebook, yep. Twitter, LinkedIn. Like, what are those?
That's to me, it's an important one because it's all about connecting your application to the real world. The idea was, in my application, I want to share something on my Facebook wall or on my Twitter feed. Let's say, sorry, I take this example once again, but in my Urza Gatherer application, the Magic the Gathering application, once I finally manage to get a card, I'm pretty proud of it, and I want to say it to everyone, so I want to share the fact that I have this card. So I did a Facebook tool to share, and Facebook changed the API 10,000 times in the the meantime. My application was not working. That drove me crazy. For Twitter, it was like nothing was really available for C# developers, so you have to deal with OAuth, you have to deal with segmenting your HTTP request to send picture. It's not easy to do. So the services in the toolkit is clearly the one-line motto once again. You want to share on Facebook, it's one line of code now. You want to share on Twitter, it's one line of code now. You want to capture and get your Facebook wall, one line of code. You want to do a search on Bing, one line of code. So far we have Bing, Facebook, and Twitter. So for Facebook and Twitter, it is read and write. For Bing, obviously, it's just read. And the community gave us two really cool new stuff. The first one is Microsoft Graph. So you can connect to your Microsoft Graph like Outlook, Word, Excel, Online. You can read your mail. You can send a mail. One line of code every time. Think about that. Sending a mail with just one line of code without having to set up a SMTP somewhere, just using Microsoft Graph.
Yeah.
And we also, and because, you know, we just acquired LinkedIn, we consider it was important to also provide a read and write provider for LinkedIn. So you can read your LinkedIn wall or publish something on LinkedIn, like, yeah, I finally managed to get this card, and you can share that on your professional network.
Oh, I could have used that. I could have used that for a project recently. I might have taken a look at that.
Yep.
So, yeah, another thing that I find is really timely is I noticed that there's RSS parsers in here, and I'm actually working on an app that's doing some RSS parsing.
So we provided that for you.
Yeah,
is
so
it the Carl RSS parser?
So I'll be able to actually remove a lot of lines of code with this. So thank you very much.
Yeah, but that's exactly the goal that we want to achieve. Remove code from your library, from your application.
Cool. So this is all available. I should say, is this available via NuGet?
Yep.
Okay. So I guess one of my big question is like, the features in here, we've talked to, it was like Mads Christensen, like this really reminds me of that, where he's like doing all this cool stuff and eventually like some of it makes it into the product itself. I think Carl has a better understanding of what this project is all about, but like, are some of these things going to make their way into the product itself?
It's possible. Let's be honest. It's possible. And for us, it's also a good way to measure what people want.
Yeah.
And if a lot of people want the hamburger menu, at some point in time, we will just move it into the core SDK.
Yeah. Okay.
That's completely. And now I'm dreaming of a world where there is no need for the toolkit, because everything actually is available in the SDK. That's a dream for at least one good reason. The SDK has a different pace. We can ship every month. So if Facebook change their mind like every 2 weeks, we can just react fast enough to ensure that developers will always have the right version. For SDK, that's a little bit tougher.
Yeah, this really, Carl, reminds me of Mad Christensen's program, or his the stuff that he does, because it's sort of
the web toolkit.
Yeah, the web toolkit. I was trying to think of the name, because he, you know, it's sort of an area to get, you know, feedback and stuff like that, and people can use this stuff today. And then once everybody is using something in there, or it sort of passes the muster, then it makes its way into the product. So This sort of feels like the same thing to me, yep. Which is awesome.
Yeah, and it's really a goal for us to be sure that we put what people want in the SDK. So yeah, it's some kind of preview version.
Okay. So is this all one giant NuGet, or can I pull in pieces somehow?
No. We don't want you to be forced to download the service if you just want to use the Color Helper, for instance. So we split actually the project into five different projects.
Okay.
There is the root one, which is UWB.toolkit, which contain mostly helpers for other part of the project. But the main one are services, animations, controls, notifications.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So is there a roadmap of stuff that you're planning to get in here? Or are you just taking kind of features in as people are willing to, commit code?
Oh, we have both. We define with the core team, mostly composed of MVP's guy, what we would love to have in the next and the next and the next versions. And we create for that on the GitHub itself milestones. So you can go to the GitHub, and if you go to issues, we'll see that we have milestone. We have V1 and V2. If you click on V2, you can see that we already think about, for instance, adding a OneDrive service. We also think about adding a ticker control, a carousel using composition. That's part of what we would like to have. But because it's a community project and completely open, we were not expecting to have the blade control, for instance. But one morning, I checked my mail and I saw that someone gave you for free this blade control. Really cool. Let's go.
The blade fairy came by.
Yeah. So it's part of surprise, thanks to the community. And we try to also ensure that the most wanted are in the list.
Yeah, I was going to ask you. So, do you accept just about any kind of feature? Or like, what is the bar? What are the criteria for actually allowing it in there?
That's the part of my job that I hate. Definitely. Because sometimes the process should be the following one. If you have an idea and you want to contribute, you should start an issue on GitHub and say, hey, guys, I have this wonderful control that helps you manage something.
Yep.
Then community and Microsofties respond, oh, that's so cool, I need it. Or, oh, yeah, I'm not sure. Are you sure we want to use it? And then we can discuss and at the very end define, okay, let's go. We'll do it or no.
Okay.
But sometimes people are just, they don't know they have to do that, and they just contribute and send us a pull request.
Okay.
So and kind this pull of, request sounds... is about a niche feature, and the toolkit has to be useful for everyone.
I was going to say, so it sounds like the criteria for the most part is that it has to have, the feature has to have wide applicability.
Yes. We cannot I don't want to have it bloated with a lot of features like can be useful for one or two people, but most of the people just don't understand why it's.
Yeah.
So I have some time to say, I'm sorry you did all the work, but that does not work with the toolkit.
Yeah.
And that's sad because that guys are just immensely motivated to help others,
right.
But the toolkit is not the right vehicle here.
Very cool. Yeah, it seems like this is just something that everybody who's doing UWP needs to look at this thing, figure out what they want to bring in. It's very cool. Is there anything that we didn't cover that you wanted to make sure we covered in regards to the toolkit?
I only have one ask.
Okay.
So far, due to the success of the toolkit, we are struggling a little bit to validate pull requests and reply to issues in a timely fashion. So, if you think you're good, you are a good UWP developer and you want to help us maintain the toolkit, please send me an email.
Okay. Very cool.
I'm looking for volunteers.
I was going to say, how do they send you an email? Are you going to tell us your email?
Oh, you obviously. So, my email is davca@microsoft.com.
Okay.
And you can also find me on Twitter at DeltaKosh.
Okay. Perfect. We'll obviously we'll put those in the show notes. Probably not your email, but we'll at least have your Twitter and then somebody can reach out through that.
Yep. No problem. Please use Twitter. That's perfect.
Okay. Very cool. Carl, what do you have for a dev tip of the week?
So I have another Microsoft GitHub account as a dev tip of the week. It's the Windows Universal Samples, which somebody will have noticed that we've made that the tip of the week before. However, the little twist is these are constantly being updated. So they have been updated for the anniversary update.
Ah.
And I actually ran into some interesting – I was searching for some documentation because I'm working on a UWP app. And the documentation at the very top in a block said, this documentation is out of date. Go see the example at this GitHub account. So I'm finding it interesting that as we're moving along here, these GitHub accounts are actually, in some cases, better documentation than the documentation on the MSDN.
Okay. Very cool. Nice, but... Oh, go ahead. Oh, you just saying that was nice. So, David.
Oh, yeah, it's nice, yes.
Yeah, we play a game on this show. I need you to pick a number between 1 and 4 inclusive, and let me know what it is.
Me?
Yes.
4.
4. Would you rather eat a small can of cat food or 7 entire lemons, even the seeds, pulp, juice, and rind?
Lemon.
Yeah, I think so, too. Yeah. I don't know what's in that cat food, man.
No. I'm pretty sure it's not from this world.
Awesome. Okay, Carl, pick a number.
I'll take number 3.
Number 3. Would you rather wear a motorcycle helmet to bed every night or always sleep with shoes and jeans on?
I will take the motorcycle helmet. I've got a... have
a
my
thing
feet.
For that.
I've got to have nothing on my feet. I can't sleep even with socks on, even if they're cold. It's
really okay.
As long as I can have the visor up, I think I'd be okay.
Otherwise, it's all foggy. In fact,
it would help keep things quieter. It might actually sleep better.
Yeah, I'm going to pick the other one. I wouldn't sleep with shoes and jeans on. The shoes would bother me more. The jeans wouldn't bother me at all. Yeah, I'm fine with the jeans. Maybe if I can, like, I don't know, if I can alternate or something. Or how about I just don't do either one? okay, so you already mentioned where people can find you on Twitter, and that was DeltaKosh, correct?
DeltaKosh, correct.
Okay, perfect. So we'll have everybody go and follow David because he's doing awesome work. And where can people find you, Carl?
You can find me on Twitter at Carl Schweitzer.
You can find me at ytechie.com or on Twitter at twitter.com/ytechie. So, David, thank you so much for coming on the show.
That's my pleasure.